This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you. From daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Welcome back, folks. We are joined by Jay Cicero, President, CEO of the Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation and the R&L Carriers New Orleans Bowl, and obviously the host committee of the most recent New Orleans Super Bowl. The countdown, Jay, is over. We're no longer counting days. You may be counting days in the aftermath of the Super Bowl. I'm not sure. Welcome to the show.
I'm not counting days after, I can tell you that. That countdown clock said 157 days. A few weeks ago, for some reason, and I just unplugged it altogether, so I didn't want to see it anymore.
Well, a lot has happened between then and now. You know, some really exciting announcements. Friday night, an announcement made by Dwayne The Rock Johnson at the WWE SmackDown, which is huge.
You know, It is huge, and it's something that the Sports Foundation, ASM Global, and the Montreal Convention Center have been working on for more than 2 years now, is that WrestleMania is coming back to New Orleans on April 11th and 12th in 2026. And it's a huge event, and we're really excited about the return.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard that there are economic implications by WrestleMania that, you know, kind of in the top 10 events that people have in their respective cities. And this is bigger than most people think, right?
It's sneaky great, as I like to say. People don't realize how big it is until they see, you know, tens of thousands of fans walking through the French Quarter wearing belts and who are all in costume and are very excited about going to the Superdome or the Smoothie King Center, the Caesars Superdome or the Smoothie King Center for this event. There's people from 36 countries who attended in 2018, sold out events all weekend, and just an incredible event and a lot of fun also. That's what's different about this event, is it's less intense than, say, a Super Bowl. Nothing's as intense as a Super Bowl, but it's so much fun to produce and to be the host, serve as the host committee for this event. And have The Rock announce it Friday night live on their show, Friday Night SmackDown, and then have a press conference at 10 p.m. Friday night. Who has a press conference at 10 o'clock on Friday night? But, you know, that's WWE style. They do like to do things differently, and they certainly have the global recognition that is important to New Orleans.
And not unlike the Super Bowl, you speak from a place of experience, because this will be our third WWE WrestleMania event, WrestleMania 42, that is put on. You were part of number 30 and number 34, right?
That's correct. We bid on both events. This is our third that we bid on, and we worked together with ASM Global to host them at their facilities as well as the convention center. But it certainly has grown tremendously since 2014, which was the first year that we hosted, and then we had it in the we pitched the WWE to bring it back during our tricentennial year, and they agreed, and so we brought it back in 2018. And so, you know, to have it back in 26, 8 years is probably a little bit too long, but to have it back here in 26 is pretty cool and just a great event that has grown tremendously since then.
So one of the things that will be different, I think, as I was looking through the information you provided, that there's actually more nights of activities with this in 2026 than in the past.
There is. You know, 2 years ago in Los Angeles, they what usually happens is a Friday night SmackDown, and then on Saturday they have some smaller events like a Hall of Fame and other type events happening. And then Sunday would be the WrestleMania at the stadium, in our case, the Caesars Superdome. And then Monday is Monday Night Raw. So, I mean, fans are here all weekend. But what they've done, what they started 2 years ago in Los Angeles, was they expanded WrestleMania itself in the stadium, in SoFi Stadium out in Los Angeles, for Saturday, included Saturday and Sunday. So two sold-out shows, 75,000 people each night for the Caesars Superdome here coming in 2026. So they've increased the economic impact. They've increased the number of people that attend and the merchandise sales and all the other economies that are increased because of the extra day. Plus the television exposure. And the social media exposure associated with this event is like the weather. It is off the charts. I heard The Rock, when he made the announcement Friday night, say that he had a half a billion social media followers himself. So that's pretty astounding.
It really is. And this is not meant as a criticism, relative to the Super Bowl, but there's a much lower cost structure to put this event on than obviously a Super Bowl event. So, the revenue is a little easier to achieve, right?
Yeah, the expenses to attract a WrestleMania are obviously a lot lower than what a Super Bowl is. Look, the economic impact and return on that investment is a lot larger for a Super Bowl than it is a WrestleMania, but it's still, nothing compares to a Super Bowl. It really doesn't. This is, WrestleMania is more in line with a men's Final Four as far as economic impact is concerned, and again, continues to grow.
Yeah. Now, they also have made some other commitments. Is that true that they've made other commitments for other events with the city, or did I misread that?
Yeah, they'll have their fan event at the convention center. There'll be a Hall of Fame event, what's called their NXT, which is their, I guess, stands for their next younger group that is coming up. It's called Stand and Deliver. Monday Night Raw, Friday Night SmackDown, NXT, Stand to Deliver, WWE World, which is their fan interactive, much like the Super Bowl experience was here, except it's all oriented towards WWE, and there's a lot of autograph signing at that event. And then the 2026 Hall of Fame ceremony will be here also, so... You know, the Montreal Convention Center will host most of those, but we haven't determined where some of the other events will be just yet. But yes, an expansion of overall more than just the two nights of WrestleMania.
You know, of all the events that you guys host that are just really just more familiar to your mainstream sports kind of audience, right? This one has always piqued my curiosity because of the popularity of this. I mean, they have an incredible local, loyal, I mean, following, right?
They absolutely do. And there's a lot of traveling fans that come in from all over the world. I think it was something like 36 countries last time. 77% of the fans that attended WrestleMania were from outside of the New Orleans region. They stayed an average of like 3.5 to 4 nights. Just an incredible event with a very unique stance as far as our world is concerned. Our world revolves around what we like to call Tier 1 and Tier 2 events. This is a Tier 1 event. A Tier 1 event has national or international broadcast component to it. It brings in has a significant economic impact to it, and brings in community programs that are associated with that event. So you have, you know, Super Bowls, men's Final Fours, women's Final Fours, WrestleMania, NBA All-Star Games. Events in that category are Tier 1 types of events. The USA Gymnastics National Championships coming in this next summer, which we've attracted also. That is a Tier 1 event because it has those components associated with it. So we're very proud to have it back again. We've been working on it for 2 years. It was a while we were preparing and doing all this work for Super Bowl. We were constantly communicating with WWE, and we were just pleased that The Rock came to town last week, and we were able he was able to announce it on our behalf.
No, absolutely. Folks are texting, ticket sales, when do we anticipate that hitting the market?
We don't know the exact date that they're going to go on sale. We do know that they are taking pre-orders at WWE.com. And so if there's the ability for folks to go ahead and sign up to get information, I encourage them to do that. They've had actually a turnover in ownership. I'm not sure if you realize that. You know, WWE was its own entity for a very long time, and then recently they merged and were falling now under the umbrella of the TKO Group, which owns UFC and WWE now. And so, they've had some changeover of their leadership, but the main leadership of The Rock now, who serves on their board of directors, Triple H, who's one of who's married to Stephanie McMahon, he is the creator and creative conceptualizer of all the shows and all the events, and they do like 300 events a year. That's absolutely amazing, the production that they do, and it's
crazy.
It's just an amazing fun event to watch.
No, absolutely, very excited about it. I heard there was this rumbling going on, you know, that I think we're going to get it. In fact, I asked Jay Romick about it the other day on air and put him on the spot. And he's like, I think I'm going to let somebody else handle that question. And I was like, just out of the blue, people are like, man, I think WrestleMania is coming here. So what are you talking about? I didn't know that there was this, you know, this buzz that was going on across our community about, you know, this announcement that was going to be made. So
that's why I call it a sneaky great event. It's a sneaky great event with huge fans. They're fans that you don't even realize that are fans of it until you start bringing it up. Business leaders, elected officials, everyone out there seems to be a fan of the event, and I've become a fan of the event because not necessarily for the wrestling part of it, but the entertainment value of the production will absolutely blow you away. It is a sight to see.
I got into a conversation the other day where this individual was a big WrestleMania fan, and he starts rattling off CEOs of major companies that are like huge followers of WrestleMania. And I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? And it's like, no, I'm telling you. He goes, this thing is so much bigger than you think. And in its following of folks that just love the entertainment value of this.
It really is. And when I don't know all the chants that everybody has and all the backstories. I know some of them.
Jay, you
got to
get with it. You got to get with it, brother. You got to get on
when
that.
When you go to one of the events and you see a sea of people, you see 75,000 people doing the chant for John Cena or The Rock or some of the other big names that are talent that are involved with it, or you hear what their walkout music is, and you see the laser shows associated with it, and the video production. It makes you smile. And part of their mission is to bring smiles to people, and they absolutely do that.
Absolutely. Let's pivot real quick. Aftermath of Super Bowl, I happened to drive around Dave Dixon the other day, going downtown. There is still a lot of equipment that is yet to be moved in that area. The dismantling of the Super Bowl may take longer than setting it up.
It is a logistics challenge associated with moving in, moving out, getting everything, what you may have down on paper and what your best plan may be. Might be interrupted by, Mardi Gras and other things that are happening here.
Weather.
the only thing bigger than Super Bowl is Mardi Gras here in New Orleans.
Right.
So other events start to take precedence. And so if you don't have to move out certain things, then they can wait until the proper time to do it.
Yeah. But it just is... emblematic of that this thing goes on, and all of you guys that are involved in this and the coordination, it's still happening.
It absolutely is. It is the biggest event, again, outside of Mardi Gras that New Orleans hosts. And the NFL just really proved that. They allowed us to do some very unique functions and events like the special cathedral lighting program at St. Louis Cathedral and the Cabildo and the Presbyter was just amazing to see. Certainly the Super Bowl parade was a huge hit. These are the words of the NFL. It was a huge hit. And we were very pleased to have produced that. You and WWL were in our host committee booth in the media center, and just how much that has grown since the last time that we hosted Super Bowl is really something that this event really brings that no other event really has, and that media attention and the social media part of it is something that we look forward to when we host the event, and we're very proud of.
Well, we appreciate the accommodation. It was a lot of fun. And you recognize right away that things just are not kind of half-baked. I mean, it is the choreograph in this whole thing is just huge. And that you could tell there are no shortcuts, right? I mean, it was first class beginning to end.
Well, when the world is at your door, we can't do it halfway, and that's part of the mentality of the Sports Foundation, the Saints, and the entire host committee, Marcus Brown, for our chair from Entergy, and programs that they led up, as well as all of our volunteer ambassadors. Chevron headed up for us. 4,000 volunteers were downtown and at the airport, and that's just a massive project in itself. It's just the volunteer aspect of it, but everything else came off so well. I'm so very proud of our staff here at the Sports Foundation, our committees, 16 committees, that were led by the business leaders in New Orleans, and then thousands of people who were part of the event. It came off extremely well, and I think everybody bought into the mission and were focused on what can we do to make sure the world knows how special New Orleans is. And we did it, and we're very proud of, very happy of the way it turned out.
Absolutely. Congratulations to all involved again, and congratulations for this most recent announcement. Another great grab for the city of New Orleans, and let the work begin, right? And there are other things
right.
I know that you have on the horizon that you have a target on that you're trying to go out after. It's and good luck with that as well. Jay, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Have a great Mardi Gras weekend this weekend, and we'll be talking soon.
Thanks, Newell.
All right, that's Jay Cicero, President and CEO of Greater New Orleans Sports Foundation, the RNL Carriers, New Orleans Bowl, and host committee of the New Orleans Super Bowl as well. We'll be right back, 504-260-1870 on the Oakland Heart Jewelers Talk and Text Line. When we come back, we'll visit with Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst. We're going to be talking about the push and the pull and the tug of war that's going on with European leaders, the Trump administration over Ukraine. Stay with us.
Take me out to the ball game.
What are you doing?
Did you know DirecTV has the most MLB games?
So you're singing?
Yeah, they put your favorite teams front and center right when you turn it on. Buy me some cold cuts and flapjacks.
Those aren't even the words.
I'm allergic to peanuts.
Stream DirecTV, home of the most MLB games. Visit DirecTV.com. Claim based on total games offered on national and regional sports networks. RSNs available with choice package or higher. Availability of RSNs varies by zip code and package.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3, plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy!
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
StreetEasy knows former New Yorkers never stop talking about how much they miss living in NYC.
Life used to feel like a movie, but since we left and bought a house, it's like living in a DIY home repair video.
When it's time to buy, let StreetEasy connect you with the right agent you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
So President Trump announces the other day that he has had communications with President Putin from Russia, and they are developing a framework for future communications and negotiations in order to end the war in Ukraine. And to the best of my knowledge and what I've been able to gather, I don't know whether or not there was any advance notice given to European leaders, our allies, and for that matter, neither President Zelensky in Ukraine. And here to talk about that and try to let us know what is going on there, Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst. Colonel, welcome to the show.
No, it's always a pleasure.
Colonel, I was kind of surprised by that announcement, and I hadn't been able to validate one way or the other whether or not there was any advance notice given to anyone else. Your thoughts?
There was not, to the best of my knowledge, any advance notice to our European allies or to the Ukrainians. And obviously this counters what had been a central tenet of the Biden administration's policy towards Ukraine since this war began now 3 years ago, which was nothing about Ukraine without Ukraine, that we would not negotiate over the head of the Ukrainians. And subsequently, of course, there was a meeting in Riyadh by the Secretary of State, the National Security Advisor, and the Sergei Lavrov, who is the foreign minister of the Russian Federation, to talk about moving ahead. They agreed to appoint special teams for the negotiations. They agreed to expand the embassies in Moscow and Washington for the two sides, which had become somewhat morbid over the last several years. And then they spent a lot of time talking about future cooperation between Russia and the United States in future, diplomatically, economically, or whatever. So this sent shockwaves through our European allies, coupled with comments made by the vice president and by the secretary of defense prior to that at the Verkunde conference in Munich, which they suggested the United States would be standing down a large portion, if not all, of its military forces in Europe, and subsequently as well, the vice president kind of scolding the Europeans for what he called their failure to follow their particular democratic values, and no words by the SecDef or by the vice president criticizing Mr. Putin for not having a whole lot of democratic values, nor any criticism of him of the aggression against Ukraine.
So one of the things that kind of surprised me, too, are these sounded like concessions to me about territory and no NATO membership. Oh. Yes, Colonel, are you there?
We have a line problem.
Okay, let us do this. Let's go to a break, Coleman, and let's reconnect with Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst. We'll be right back, folks. All right, folks, we're back with Colonel Jeff McCausland, CBS military analyst. Colonel, I apologize for the interruption. I was asking, relative to what seemed to me to be concessions that were offered up immediately about territory concessions and no NATO membership to the Russians, it just seems to me that was kind of a weird approach for a negotiation.
Yeah, I would say so. Whether you are in favor of rapidly moving towards a bilateral negotiation with the United States and Russia or not, it would seem to me a negotiating tactic whereby you give away several major things even before the negotiations begin is just not a good tactic. And we did, in fact, do that in the president's words, as you described, saying that Ukraine would not become a member of NATO, saying that Ukraine would have to make territorial guarantees. The president went on from that, said, you know, that Russia should be readmitted to the G7, even talked about reducing sanctions. So I think made some significant concessions up front. On the Russian side, so far, they've made absolutely zero concessions about anything. And in fact, they've served to reiterate what has been their longstanding position on the war for several years, and that is Ukraine can't go into NATO. The four provinces they claim are Russian must be recognized as Russian territory. Oh, by the way, they don't control all the territory of those four provinces. This required the Ukrainians to actually retreat from their current positions. The Zelensky government would have to go away, and they want a new government, obviously one that's much more amenable to Russian desires. Real limitations would have to be put on the Ukrainian army. Right now, the Ukrainian army is about 1 million men under arms. Russians propose that they be reduced to no more than 85,000 and further reductions in all their other armaments. And they went on to say that Ukraine has to accept and proclaim Russian as the official language of Ukraine and even change the names of some cities, towns, and streets that have been converted to Ukrainian and revert them back to the Russian language. And that has been consistently the Russian position. And even with these negotiations beginning, that hasn't changed.
Hasn't that been part of the problem with the sovereignty of Ukraine all along, has been Russian intrusion?
Well, yeah, you can go back historically. I mean, when the Soviet Union was formed after the Russian Revolution, Ukraine declared its independence, and there was a civil war between the so-called whites and the reds. It went on for a number of years. Thousands of people were killed, and a final agreement was signed in Sevastopol in Crimea. Oh, by the way, ending that and formally incorporating Ukraine into the Soviet Union. Subsequently, of course, in 1956, we know that Nikita Khrushchev ceded a piece of territory to Ukraine, which included Crimea, because it had been moved to another province at one point or another. And that has always been a Russian contention that was transferred, illegally, or it was a poor agreement by Khrushchev. But the Russians, of course, did acknowledge the territorial integrity of Ukraine at the end of the Soviet Union, and furthermore acknowledged that in a thing called the Budapest Memorandum, signed between Ukraine, United States, United Kingdom, and Russia, respecting the sovereign territory of Ukraine when Ukraine transferred the nuclear weapons that were on their territory from the days of the Soviet Union back to the Russian Federation. But all those things now have been trampled upon following this invasion by Russia. 3 years ago.
Well, how do you bring about a spirit of deterrence here if you make these territorial concessions to them and they don't suffer at all? I mean, and if you don't go back to returning Crimea and a vast majority of the Donbass region back to the Ukrainians, and the Russians walk away having all of that. I mean, I don't quite understand, how do you deter this from happening again in a decade from today?
Well, that's exactly right, and that's been one of the major concerns. I mean, Russians, from the Ukrainian perspective, invaded Ukraine in 2014. That's when they occupied the Crimea. That's when they began which is sort of a small civil war, and was the Donbass, supporting so-called rebels in the Donbass. There was a force put in under an agreement by the Organization for Security Cooperation in Europe during an armistice a number of years ago, but that has been violated repeatedly. And then, of course, the Russians invaded a second time in 2022. Now, there have been proposals that if, in fact, there is a ceasefire and a settlement, that some of the European countries, most notably the British and the French, have talked about bringing in peacekeepers. But peacekeepers, you have to talk about what is their mission and to what size. If they're there in small numbers, they're basically a tripwire. And as somebody said, I think rather eloquently, that's called bluff and prey. But if you put them in there at sufficient size to create a deterrent, as you're suggesting, well, then you're talking a couple hundred thousand troops probably. And the British and the French, while saying they would be willing to do that, would not do so without what they call an American backstop. And it seems right now pretty clear to me that backstop is not something that the Trump administration wants to do. Furthermore, of course, if the United States is moving away, as it seems to be, from its overall commitments to the NATO alliance and to Article 5 and the security guarantees that we've provided Europe since the end of the Second World War, then that deterrence, many would argue, erodes further for Mr. Putin, not only conducting further aggression against Ukraine, but might he then consider aggression against one of the other countries of NATO, perhaps one of the small countries in the Baltic republics that support NATO, or Poland. Sometime in the future.
When President Macron visited President Trump, it seemed that he was very insistent about these security guarantees. But other than peacekeepers, because you correct me if I'm wrong, in modern times, we've tried this several times. Has it really ever worked?
Well, it freezes the conflict in place. I mean, but it never gets to the final solution. So we had peacekeepers. And I visited with them on the Golan Heights between Syria and Lebanon. Well, we know how that went. There are peacekeepers in Cyprus from the days many, many years ago of fighting between Greek and Turkish Cypriots on that island. In essence, we're in a ceasefire. There are no peacekeepers there necessarily, but we're in a ceasefire in Korea with us and the North Korea, which has gone on. That ceasefire has gone on since 1953. So in terms of freezing a conflict in place, and, you know, ending violence, peacekeepers have, you could argue, been successful. As far as that moving the process then to a longer-term solution and reestablishing some level of security for all the states involved, not so much.
Yeah, not to mention the cost that the peacekeeping mission, I mean, it's racking up dollar after dollar. I mean, it's like huge amounts of money.
Right, exactly. And then the question also is this peacekeeping force there under what auspices? Is it there on the United Nations auspices? Is it there under the Organization and Security Cooperation in Europe's auspices, as the group were back after the invasion of 2014? Or would it be there under a NATO auspices? Now, if they're under a NATO auspice, you could say there's a certain amount of deterrence involved in that force, because an attack on that force would be an attack on a NATO country, and therefore you could argue invoke Article 5 of the NATO Security Agreement for all the members then to respond.
So, I don't know about you, but I mean, if it were me, I try to put myself in the place of the negotiators. First thing I'd want to hear is, what concessions are the Russians going to make? I mean, obviously, what they're looking for is, in one of my texters here, and I think it's appropriately put, they just want an out-and-out surrender of the Ukrainians. I mean, if they're not willing to concede anything.
Right.
I'm sorry.
I mean, the Trump administration, somebody said the other day, is seeking peace, and the Russians are seeking victory. So you have two different objectives here. And furthermore, I would say for the Russians, this is really part of a longer effort. Ultimately, what Mr. Putin wants to accomplish, which has been a goal for every Russian leader and every leader in the Soviet Union since the beginning of NATO, and that is to damage or destroy NATO, drive a wedge between the United States and its NATO allies. So in some ways, this effort in Ukraine and now getting into a bilateral negotiation with the United States over the heads of the Europeans and not involving them, and at the same time the United States talking about pulling forces out of Europe, this is every Russian leader's dream. One Russian journalist said the other day, this is like Christmas, Easter Sunday, and New Year's Eve all rolled up into one as far as the perspective of the Russians.
So what right now, because it seems to me that obviously I believe Donald Trump when he says the Russians want to get to some resolution, because I think they're kind of down and out in Beverly Hills right now, for lack of a better term. I just think that they're in a bad place. How bad is it? I mean, do we have any idea how bad the state of the state is for Russia?
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, and that makes the fact that we're making concessions to me a bit more puzzling, quite frankly. I mean, what have the Russians accomplished? Okay, well, they invaded and they thought they would take 3 days. In fact, officers were told to pack their dress uniforms 3 years ago because they'd need them for the victory parade in 3 days. Well, this is now going on 3 years. I hope that those officers, if they're still alive, are packing those uniforms around wherever they're going. They seized a significant amount of Ukrainian territory at the onset and it reached their largest level of occupation in April of 2022. Since then, they actually have been pushed back to in a substantial fashion. They still control about 20% of Ukrainian territory, and they are making, I would call it, slow but steady progress, but at an enormous cost. Estimates now by Russian intelligence, Russians have suffered over 800,000 casualties, well over 100,000 dead, huge amounts of loss of military equipment, tanks, artillery, armored troop carriers, to the point that the Russians are now employing T-55 tanks on the battlefield in Ukraine. These were tanks that were constructed in the 1960s. Back at home, it's starting to have an effect upon the Russian economy. Inflation rates, we Americans are upset when inflation hits about 3%. Well, it's about 9 to 10% in Russia right now. Interest rates in Russia right now are 20% or higher, and those are all effects of the war. And furthermore, the Russians now have become totally dependent on external sources for a lot of their military hardware. Again, somebody suggested that perhaps as many as 60% of all the artillery rounds that are fired by the Russians are actually made in North Korea. So they're not in exactly the best shape right now. And Mr. Putin, I think, faces some dilemmas. If he can't bring this war to a ceasefire or to a close in the next few months, he's likely to be forced to demand a mobilization of manpower because he's short so much manpower. And that would be very, very socially and politically unpopular back in Russia. So their situation is not that great, but it doesn't seem that we're making, to my mind, the best efforts to capitalize on that so far, at least in these negotiations.
I read somewhere someone put it this way. We may not necessarily have a conflict with Russia, but we almost certainly have a conflict with Putin. Do you believe that?
Yeah, I believe that's very true. Mr. Putin has staked, I think, his future. This is an existential problem for him. Again, he promised this is a special military technical operation. It's only going to last about 3 days, and here we are 3 years later and 800,000 casualties. The long-term, I think, strategic effects on the Russian economy are enormous in terms of their ability to recover from it. But at the same time, it's not Mr. Putin personally one has to consider. It's this ruling class that he's established, the so-called Siloviki. He's the people that are around him. You know, a lot of people speculate, right, well, if Putin was to die, everything would be hunky-dory by tomorrow. And I say not so fast. There's a lot of guys around Putin who are every bit as extreme as he is. But for the average Russian, you know, we have no particular issue with them, except that their country is executing aggression against a neighbor.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see. And, you know, I'm sure we'll revisit in the very near future as this thing continues to unwind. I'm not sure if we're going left, right, or straight at it. It seems to be a very meandering path right now, and a lot of distrust and lack of confidence on the part of a number of our European allies. Colonel Jeff McCausland, as always, we truly appreciate your time, your insight. Have a great weekend.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you, sir. We'll be right back. Stay with us. Scoot's back in the saddle again on hump day. What do we have coming up, Scoot?
Yeah, get a little saddle sore here already. Just getting back in the saddle. Man, I had it's from getting back in the saddle and nothing else. All right, so look, I had a great time in the Crobat Hatters. Thanks for everybody who showed up. I hope I got stuff to you. Had a great time with my family. They're heading back to Portland today, but just had a great time with them. I want to thank Ian for sitting in. But I am ready to be back at it today, and we've got a lot to talk about. And my friend Amanda Shaw is going to join us in the studio at 2 o'clock this afternoon. So a lot to get to this afternoon.
All right, Scoot's headed your way with a great lineup, folks. Hope you enjoyed today's show. Have a great Wednesday evening. We'll see you again in the morning.
The March to spring training and opening day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseball Isn't Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseball Isn't Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.